Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to yet another episode of Gym Class All-Stars. Myself and Robbie are back yet again to give you all the happenings in the worlds of sports. Like we always talk about as we start our episode, this podcast is brought to you by the Vigit app. Bet fake coins, win real prizes, what's not to love? Like we touched upon probably a few times, they're doing this promotion. It's really simple. You sign up for free and you bet coins, and then you can win like up to a few thousand dollars if you know your NBA. So race against us. I'm currently in 50th place and I have, you know, I'm kind of scared. I've made some horrible predictions, but even I'm in the running to win some money. So you should do it as well. Sign up now, use code ALLSTARS, help us out. But, you know, we are in June right now. The weather is getting warmer. People are out doing whatever they want to do. Sports have taken a little bit of a back burner. So we're grasping at straws here, it seems like. However, we do have a lot to talk about in the world of basketball because playoffs are still going. There's, as always, a lot of drama going on because the NBA can't take an hour without being unnecessarily dramatic. And yeah, we're all here for it. We gobble it up like it's a soap opera, and I'm all here for it.
Yeah, that's the best part.
Where should we start, honestly?
Let's start with the one team who the playoffs have been going pretty smoothly for. That'd be the Phoenix Suns. Man, the Phoenix Suns look good. Just completed a four-game sweep of the Denver Nuggets. MVP Nick Jokic, fortunately, wasn't enough. We're going to talk about what happened to him in that last game in a second here, but the Phoenix Suns are playing some excellent basketball right now. And, you know, I've been praising him all year, all on the back of Chris Paul. It seems like he's the one who's closing out games. He's the one who they're trusting with the basketball in his hands. He's making the right decisions. He has really limited the amount of turnovers that he makes. I think this is the team that's going to win the Western Conference. I'm going to say it. They're the only team that's qualified for a conference final right now. Everybody else is tied 2-2. I like how Phoenix is playing.
We've kind of talked to this earlier. We said whoever, well, I think I said whoever wins between the Suns and Lakers was probably going to be the team that gets to the Western Conference final. And here we are. I didn't think the Nuggets could really take down whether it was going to be the Suns or Lakers, and, you know, came true. I mean, they got swept, but we'll talk about that in a sec. I will also get into the Clippers and Jazz, but that series is, that momentum is really starting to shift too. I know it's, you know, it wasn't a sweep either side, but it's kind of starting to go LA's way, but well, I digress. Sure. What's interesting though is, especially, I know you've been praising Chris Paul the entire year, but Chris Paul has had some moments where he does a lot in terms of facilitating, but he wasn't just scoring at high volume. These past four games, he was doing both, and it was tremendous. His shoulder is, I have heard, is on, you know, kind of hurting, but with a few days of rest, because the Clippers series has to go at least six games, that'll be good for his health. I think it's something he desperately needs. And yeah, the Suns are in the driver's seat right now. It's going to be, who are they going to face? Is it going to be the Utah Jazz or is it going to be the Clippers? But that team, deep, and their starters can really hold their own. That's not to love.
Yeah, no, they, unfortunately for Denver, you know, the lack of Murray really showed in this series. Phoenix, like you said, their depth really was able to help them prevail in this one. So I'll go back to what I was saying earlier. Game four, trying to force mount some kind of comeback and push. Nick Jokic commits a hard foul on Cameron Payne. And the MVP gets a flagrant two ejection, the first flagrant two we've seen in the playoffs this season. You're shaking your head right now. You didn't like this, I don't think.
I don't like a flagrant two. I mean, it was definitely intentional. Like, we all know that. But to say a flagrant two when he caught him on the nose a little bit, and, like, it wasn't like an eye poke or anything like that, didn't, like, punch him in the chest. To me, it warranted a flagrant one, and especially in – a high pressure situation like that, I don't think it was the right call, but, you know, I don't think it would have mattered in the end. You know, Denver was not going to win that series.
No.
Revisionist history though. What happens if Jamal Murray was healthy?
that could change things potentially. I mean, that last game was closer than most. I'll say this though. I didn't like it. The thing is, I like when that call gets made, not necessarily in that specific situation per se, with how little contact seemingly really occurred. But I'm not mad when a superstar gets ejected on a flagrant two. In fact, I like to see it more because I think everybody deserves equal treatment in that, and there should be no superstar treatment. However, that might be the only specific instance where I'm like, okay, don't kick out the MVP. Don't kick out the superstar. Like, that was Denver's only chance. Not that they really, like you said, were going to do anything in terms of winning the series, but if they were going to win one game, the only chance they had was Jokic. That's a biff by those refs.
Well, in that case, do you think that should have been a flagrant two? Like, just, you know, ignore any external details in this case.
No, I don't. I think it looked a lot more aggressive than it was, just because it was the contact that was made was in the face. So that always is bad.
And Jokic, like, just kind of flailing his arms around. Like, smack.
Like, he was very clearly just trying to, like, commit a hard foul. And if you can't do that in basketball anymore, like, man, that's how you're supposed to vent your frustration in a sport like that. Just nothing dangerous. You know, obviously, didn't mean to hit him in the head or anything, but.
All right. We're going to talk about superlatives later, but like, my out of the box superlative this week goes to best brothers, and it's the Jokic brothers, who are ready to spring on the court and just beat the shit out of like any Suns player touched Jokic. I thought that was hilarious. They like, security was like, no, like,
they were ready to hold these guys back. These dudes are monsters too. I mean, they're brothers to Nick Jokic. They probably have to be, but they were huge.
They look like, I saw a glimpse of them. Like, I'm sure you saw the video too, but it looked like it was like if Nick Jokic like started pumping steroids into his body. Like, they looked pretty tall and looked like they were ready to beat up someone.
Yes, 100%. They're mountains of men. Oh man. But anyway, Phoenix, the team to advance here, Booker, Paul, Ayton, all of them going to be looking forward to a Western Conference Finals matchup with the winner of the next series we're going to talk about here, Utah Jazz and LA Clippers. Utah jumped out to the early 2-0 lead like we had talked, or I think last week might honestly have even, I don't even know if the Clippers had made it into the second round yet.
What we said last week was the Clippers had made it and they, you know, beat the Mavs in game 7. But we were kind of torn. We thought the Clippers were just going to get off to such a hot start, and they played well in games 1 and 2, but they, you know, happened to lose. I mean, Rudy Gobert, effectively a game-winning block on Marcus Morris to seal the deal. I'm sorry. Got a nice little burp there. Hope everyone heard that on audio. But in addition, I mean, game 2 was reasonable. It kind of got away from them at the end, but, you know, Donovan Mitchell was killing it. And then game 3, Mitchell gets hurt. The Clippers really run away with it. And then game 4 last night, same deal, where Kawhi is finally look like the monster that I saw in 2019, just dismantle my Sixers. And I love watching it because I know people doubt him, like you, you right there. And to me, it's like Kawhi, I'm not saying Kawhi is greater than LeBron, but he's the closest thing to Jordan like we've seen since Jordan in terms of just that assassin. Maybe Kobe, but like, you get kind of get what I'm saying, where it's just
I do.
Casually drop like 30 and, you know, like
30 or 40. And yeah, no, how do I want to word this? I think there's nothing scarier in the league right now than Kawhi Leonard down 0-2. I can't explain it. That man just, he has that other level, and it comes out in the weirdest inconsistent ways sometimes. And that's what I have issues with. But when it's out, this man is, you know, left in the playoffs, maybe the best player left. So maybe Durant, depending on how you rank players. We'll get to that later. But that's what I'm saying. If he has that turned on, and Paul George has seemingly turned over a better leaf here in these last two games, again, that's the best duo left without really any question. Except, okay, the Nets. But this, man, they should be doing this. This series should go 7. I just don't know who. I think the fact that Mike Conley's been out is also playing a lower key role than a lot of people realize, because it's forcing Mitchell into being more of a ball handler, which is fine for the most part. But you talk about how he got hurt a little bit in game 3. Like, that's going to happen the more he's, you know, dominating the basketball. Mike Conley eases some of that pressure off a little bit. He's not almost, you know, 90% of the time handling the basketball for that team. that's tough to not have your starting point guard, all-star point guard in right now.
The other thing too is Bogdanović has not looked great. Like he's okay, but he's not shooting at the clip he should be shooting at. And that is really hurting them because he's getting a lot of good looks. And, you know, that's kind of the weird matchup. Like you have either Kawhi or Paul George on Donovan Mitchell usually. And then, I mean, Marcus Morris, I think, gets Rudy Gobert. I mean, that's just the center position is a mess for the Clippers, but I'm not going to get into that whole spiel. Bogdanović seems to be the guy who gets left open a lot because usually Paul George or Kawhi is like kind of circling and doing other things, but has not been shooting well. So if that changes, that could be sort of an X factor, but they're definitely missing Mike Conley. And Jordan Clarkson as well has not shot great in the past two games that they lost.
Yeah, Clarkson, I mean, he's one of the biggest pieces they have, obviously the sixth man of the year. Without Conley, he has to be the one that steps up the most in terms of, you know, being that extra guard. They don't really have another point guard that they play, right?
Not particularly. I mean, you have Joe Ingles, the ball dominant scorer, who apparently just has Paul George's number. So that could play a role, just pure statistics.
A homeless basketball player.
He's good, though.
He's great.
He's like Aaron Baines if Aaron Baines was actually, like, good.
Don't you start the Aaron Baines slander, man. You're going to fall off the wagon.
Aaron Baines will be an MVP soon.
One day. But, so, yeah. Tied 2-2, game five tomorrow between LA and the Clippers. Again, winner will play Phoenix. That's what the West looks like. East, still a few more question marks. Start at the top, the Sixers. So they had dropped game one to Atlanta, like we talked about last week, dominated in the next two games. But then that injury that we talked about to Joel Embiid started to show a little bit more, especially in that second half. In game four against the Hawks, 0 of 12 from the field in the second half. Hawks end up winning the game by 3. First off, before we talk about who we think is going to end up, you know, coming through in this series, how concerned are you about Embiid's health for the potential of the long-term playoffs?
Actually, right before this was game four, but at the end of game three, I was texting my buddy, him and I are both Sixers fans, and as the Sixers were blowing out the Hawks, and I was like, what do you think about the idea of resting Embiid like in one of these games? And he's like, no, you can't do it because the Hawks Hawks could come back without, like, if Embiid's not there. And I agree with that, but his health is beginning to worry me a little bit. He had a bad game. I think the knee was a bit of a factor, but I think he just had an off game. I mean, he had 12 points in the first half. I don't know how many points he had in the second. I think it was like 4 because it was all free throws, but he missed a lot of shots he usually makes. And, you know, to me, while it sucks we lost by 3 with Embiid shooting like 0 for 10 from the field in the second half. That to me is good because he's not going to do that for the next 3 games, guaranteed. So I'm still optimistic, but losing last night did not help. Like, Atlanta is one of those teams that can catch fire at just weird times. And the Sixers, while they are great offensively and defensively, I don't think they can shoot their way out of it. And that is worrisome.
Yeah, the Sixers shooting could be better. Curry had a tough look at it to tie the game at the end of that last one. Not a real look. I mean, surrounded by 3 Hawks players. You know, the loss of Danny Green is going to hurt. He's one of your primary shooting options, also primary defensive options. The other part of the injury story, though, is that Trae Young has been dealing with, if I'm not mistaken, a shoulder injury of his own or an elbow injury. That could come into play at some point, especially if this series goes 7, you know, playing on the road with a sore shoulder in the other team's building. That's a tough situation to win, even if the other team's best player is also laboring a little bit. So what I'm trying to say here is I think the Sixers are going to be fine for this series. The issue becomes, you know, if it's Brooklyn, what Brooklyn roster are you facing? Who's healthy? Who's there? And if it's Milwaukee, is Embiid going to be healthy enough to be able to do what Giannis does?
Yeah. So I think the way the series is going to end, I think when they go back to Philly, they're going to blow them out, assuming Embiid is healthy, which he should be. And then game six, I think, will be one of those games that was like a 4 or 5 point game. And I think the Sixers will then win in six. But yeah, if Embiid's not healthy, it's going to be super, like, we will not win the Eastern Conference Finals, no matter if we play Milwaukee or the Nets. The only way we'd beat the Nets is if, like, the entirety of their big three got hurt and Blake Griffin was their primary scorer. Nice. I wouldn't be concerned in that case, but
don't sleep.
Yeah. So I got to give a shout out to Bogdanovich though. The other Bogdanovich on the Hawks. He is shooting lights out and he physically pains me to watch. Cause when he gets the ball, I just know he's going to rip it. And he shoots at such a high percentage and shoots a lot of shots and a lot of them go in. That's basketball analysis for you folks. But he's incredible. Like he'll rip it.
I don't know what of this is just him and what of this is, you know, his background growing up, but he is just one of those guys that has always taken the game so seriously. And at every moment, it's just like, you're scared the shot he's taking is going in. Cause it looks so, I don't want to say perfect, but like, so basketball-esque, it's so picturesque, it's like exactly what it's supposed to look like. So it always is terrifying because he's one of those guys that his shot just always looks like it's going in. And in this case, he has in fact caught fire. Yeah, that game one, he silenced the crowd. That doesn't just happen for players. I mean, I don't want to compare him too much to Manu Ginobili, but like that's something I would always see in especially in the finals the Spurs beat the Heat in. You know, Manu Ginobili would come in and he'd hit the timely shots. It wouldn't be Duncan. It wouldn't be Kawhi. It wouldn't be Tony Parker. It'd be Manu would come in. He'd hit a big three. He'd hit a big layup. That would end the game. Same story here with Bogdanovich.
He reminds me a lot of Klay Thompson, like offensively, I mean, not defensively, or like a JJ Redick in the sense that, I mean, not defensively as well, but just the way he shoots and just rip it, that fast release, all that. So he's the one I'm most worried about. And obviously Trae Young. Trae Young's been playing well, battling a shoulder injury. He had like 18 assists last night, which is just insane. But
absurd.
Anyone else in that team, I think we can take. And it's just we have to stop the two of them. But their backcourt's playing amazing.
Yeah, if you can limit that. I mean, you got two all-defensive guards. So, and we'll get to that in a few minutes here too. But you should have the ability to slow some of these guys down. So hopefully – you know, game five, you guys can regroup on defense and counter whatever the Hawks are going to throw at you. Moving down the two versus the three, the Bucks and the Nets. This is going to be a roller coaster of a series as well. So last week we talked Brooklyn up 2-0, kind of jumped the Bucks even after Milwaukee's sweep of the Heat. Kyrie goes down in game three. Brooklyn loses, 2-1. Game four, no Kyrie, or is it game four Kyrie got hurt in?
Game four, Kyrie got hurt.
Yeah, sorry. Kyrie got hurt in game four. Bucks lose, or Bucks win again, tie the series at two. Kyrie is now expected to be out for the rest of the series and potentially more. However, James Harden, as I don't remember if I predicted on here, but I was definitely talking to a buddy yesterday saying this, I predicted that Harden would come back just in the nick of time so they would still have two stars to play. He is hopeful to play. It's pretty much as long as he doesn't, you know, deal with any setbacks during the shoot around, he's going to be good to go and start at point guard for Brooklyn. Does anything really change in that case for Brooklyn? I know you get a little more of the playmaking side, maybe a little less of the flashy dribble moves, but how much of the game plan changes with Harden instead of Kyrie?
Well, the Bucks game plan shouldn't change because, you know, Kyrie and Harden are sort of interchangeable in that regard, but I don't know. I think with Harden and KD, like the Nets, I think I'd still pick them to win the series, but it's going to be close. I think, you know, Harden gets hurt game two very early. Or no, was it game one or game two got hurt?
Harden got hurt in game two, I think, of the first round.
No, I think it was game one.
Was it? Has he might not have really played in the playoffs.
I think it was literally, yeah, the first minute of game one. Whatever it may be, though, regardless, they blew him out, and that was with Kyrie and KD. Like, I think I'd rather have Harden out there just for, you know, more shooting capabilities and maybe a little bit of playmaking. It's difference is marginal, but only having Kevin Durant out there is going to kill them because they have no one else. Like, the roster is so built on the superstars where they're doomed without them. Yeah, Bruce Brown. They have Landry Shamet, who plays like 4 minutes a game, even though he was so good in the Sixers.
And the Clippers. Yeah, they have such a weird roster. And if Harden doesn't end up playing today, yeah, the guards situation, you also have to remember they have Dinwiddie, who hasn't played most of this season. He'll be back next year. So the guards are going to be dwindling. Yeah, they'll probably start Bruce Brown and honestly, Shamet or, God forbid, Tyler Johnson.
God forbid Tyler Johnson.
But yeah, you're right. Durant alone is not going to cut it. So that's what the Bucks are probably hoping for here. I still think as long as they have two of them, though, that the Nets are going to end up winning that series.
It's weird, though, because I know how good – like, game three, for example, that game – I think it was, like, 83-80.
It was 86-83.
That was – one of the most bizarre games I saw from one of the best offensive teams of all time. You know, that could happen again, but that's like the only way I can see the Bucks winning this series. And it just feels weird. Like, that game, it took Giannis and Chris Middleton to score all the points. And then just the Nets to kind of suck most of the game. Yeah. They shot, I think, under 40% or just at 40% clip, which is horrendous. Like, I think maybe I can shoot that in the NBA. Who knows? No, I'm kidding.
Hey, 10-day contract.
Whoa. Pump the brakes there. But
baby steps.
One day, one of these episodes will get me an NBA contract. You watch. I am so polarized by this series. That's my problem. I'm like stuttering thinking about it. Because in my head and on paper, Kevin Durant and James Harden, with a bunch of quote-unquote NBA bums surrounding them, should still be able to beat Giannis and Chris Middleton and even Drew Holiday. So,
yeah,
I'm still rolling with the Nets. I think it may go to seven. It's not going to be a clean sweep. Mike Budenholzer probably won't get fired from a cannon at the end of all this, which is good for Mike Budenholzer.
Maybe like a musket or something. I don't know.
I bet you he doesn't get fired.
He's put up a fight, and I honestly, once they tied it, I was like, shit, he's not getting fired. Like,
that's good for everyone, though.
It's not good for the Milwaukee Bucks franchise.
I agree, but it's good for you as a Miami Heat fan and myself as a 76ers fan. Mike Budenholzer, who can I compare him to? Mike Budenholzer is like
George Karl.
No. Jeez, that's deep. I was going to say Dwayne Casey, but I give Mike Budenholzer a little bit more credit than Dwayne Casey.
Yeah.
What's like a football analogy I can do? Because he's like a Jim Harbaugh, but like Jim Harbaugh when he went to the Super Bowl, Jim Harbaugh.
Jeff Fisher.
No, Jeff Fisher was so average. Jeff Fisher is like Stan Van Gundy in terms of comparison.
Oh, gosh. All right. This will be another segment, another week when we'll compare all these coaches together.
I pick NFL coaches and you give me the NBA equivalent.
Perfect. Oh, man. But, yeah, so game five of that series is tonight, about 7:30 Central Time, 8:30 Eastern Time.
Wait, pump the brakes there. You think you can just slip in Central Time first? Come on. No one uses Central Time.
Yo, come to Iowa. We use Central Time. We're great. It's corn.
It's literally the request to say come to Iowa is already too much.
It's a lot.
Come to Iowa.
It's too much. Come to Chicago when I move to Chicago.
Okay.
That's better. All right. So that's our playoff update here. Still a little more to go through here in the NBA. We're going to go next to the awards. So before we do the all defensive teams, just to mention, Rudy Gobert was in fact named the defensive player of the year. Ben Simmons of Philadelphia finishing in second. Draymond Green of Golden State in third. The third most first place votes did actually go to Bam Adebayo. Whatever. But either way, Rudy Gobert, you can't argue it. Jazz, best record in the NBA. Rudy Gobert, the best defensive player on said team. I personally think Ben Simmons still should have won it. I think you also probably think Ben Simmons should have won it. But yeah, maybe it puts that chip on that shoulder. It's the same idea as how Jokic beat out Embiid for the MVP. You know, it'll all look a little bit different if the Sixers come out on top of the league.
you know, Rudy Gobert can guard positions 1 through 5. So to me, it's, you know, it's basically the same thing, right, Ravi?
Of course.
Rudy Gobert can guard any point guard he wants and not get killed.
Everyone.
Yeah, easily. This is all sarcasm.
He didn't give up 42 points to Ben Simmons.
No. Of course not. He would never do such a thing. He's no. The depoy.
The depoy. So those whatever. Are our thoughts on that. Yeah, well
whatever.
One award remains here still. That would be the Rookie of the Year. I would assume it's going to be announced in the next couple of days. My guess is LaMelo Ball. The other options really are Anthony Edwards and maybe Tyrese Halliburton.
I think Anthony Edwards has the best shot of it not going to LaMelo Ball, but
yeah.
I wouldn't hold my breath if you have Anthony Edwards, Rookie of the Year futures on your bets.
There it is. Betting man right here.
What did our audience say? Because usually, you know, they're usually pretty good.
Let me take a peek. One moment here. Yeah, you'll probably get it for me.
Like we do a lot of times, we do these Twitter polls just so we can make fun of them. No, we'll actually love to hear what people have to say. Wow, we got 59 votes.
Nice.
Tyrese Halliburton received 0 of
them. Oh.
It's about 68% LaMelo Ball, 32% Anthony Edwards. So good showing from our fans, but not a good showing from Tyrese Halliburton.
But so LaMelo, the favorite here, it seems like missed some time, still the favorite though. So seems like that's going to hold firm in that case.
Yeah.
Sad day for Halliburton. I thought he was great.
Get a vote.
That's so sad.
I want to say, like, Tyrese Halliburton played extremely well this year. The Kings just suck.
Yeah, they really do. Well, it'll be interesting to see what they end up doing though when he could potentially be ready to take over as a starting point guard, whether they go with him or Fox, but that'll be interesting.
We should play them together, but that's a different issue. Yeah.
We'll get to that someday.
For more of our Kings discussions, we'll make a new podcast called Kings and Queens, but not the TV show.
I love it already. New spin-off.
We will talk about only the Sacramento Kings, and it'll be probably 5-minute episodes once every month.
Once a day. I could trash the Kings enough.
We need to talk constructively about them if we make a podcast.
We can do that too, but it's going to be a lot more difficult and a lot of overhaul.
Just imagine pitching that. So we want to make a podcast. Okay, what's it about? Sports. All right, like, cool. What's, like, the topic? The Sacramento Kings. Get out of my office.
You can go. Don't come back. Oh, yeah, that would not go well. But, you know, I think we can make it work.
Sure.
That's why we're workshopping it here. All right, so now we're going to go over the defensive All-NBA teams released yesterday. Two teams, first and the second. We will start with the first team. So the guards were Drew Holiday of the Milwaukee Bucks and Ben Simmons of the Philadelphia 76ers. And the forwards, Giannis Antetokounmpo of the Bucks, Draymond Green of the Warriors, and the depoy Rudy Gobert of the Jazz. Gobert and Simmons, the only two unanimous choices. I'm going to be honest, this isn't exactly what I predicted, but I really don't have any complaints as to this first team. I think these are probably the 5 best defensive players in basketball, sub maybe Jimmy Butler, but Jimmy missed a lot of time, so I'm not by any means saying he should. I actually didn't have Jimmy on either of these teams in my projections, but I'm pretty satisfied with that first team.
Do you have Marcus Smart as one of them?
No, I had Chris Paul.
All right. That's fair. Marcus Smart is always one of those people. I don't think he had a great year, but like I always just expect to see him on there.
Yeah, he just missed a lot of time, him and Beverly both.
Beverly's a bum. I will say that actively. Patrick Beverly is like the video of when Zion is like, you know, playing some kid who's like clapping in his face and he's like, who is this? That's Patrick Beverly in the NBA now.
I love that. That's a great comparison. But yeah, pretty standard first team here. You got your 3 finalists for the Defensive Player of the Year, Drew Holiday and Giannis, who are, you know, 2 of the best defensive players on the best defensive team. Not the best, but one of the best defensive teams in basketball. So no complaints there. Second team is like out of a dream from you and me. It's absolutely spectacular. So the second team, the guards, you've got Matisse Thybulle of the Philadelphia 76ers and Jimmy Butler, I assume, is the other guard for the Miami Heat. And then for the forwards, the one little break in the action, Kawhi Leonard of the LA Clippers. Then you've got Bam Adebayo of the Miami Heat and Joel Embiid of the Philadelphia 76ers. 2 Sixers, 2 Heat. three total Sixers on the defensive teams, but that second team is special to you and I and to my family, because they're all Sixers fans and I'm a Heat fan. I mean, that's just, I mean, you couldn't really ask for any more, because you're not getting Kawhi not on these teams. So,
like I told you, it literally looks like we like hacked into the NBA system and made it. Like, even Kawhi Leonard being on that second team is like, we would have said that as like just all of our bias like put into one. Like, that is the second team. And
yes,
I'm not surprised about Embiid. I'm not surprised about Bam. Jimmy, we kind of are in agreement that it's surprising in the sense that he just missed a lot of time. Kawhi Leonard, I'm not surprised because I know how good he is and probably the only person who realizes it. But that's what I mean. A lot of people seem to overlook what he can do and how much of a presence he is. And then Matisse Thybulle, I'm shocked. Not that he deserves to be on there, but it's just like he plays so little amount of time. Like, I am the only one, or Sixers fans are the only people really watching him constantly, and they see how good he is and who he can defend. But to me, mainstream media just wouldn't get it. You know, it's
no, they wouldn't.
That just sound such like a hipster. Mainstream media just wouldn't get it, bro. Like, they just,
hey, you liked Matisse before it was cool. Let me say that.
I did. That is the best part. One of my good friends is a Celtics fan. I know it's a tough relationship we have.
I dated a Celtics fan once. I understand.
Bummer. But I remember he's like, I don't get all this hype in Matisse Thybulle. You guys traded like two picks to get him. Like, he's not that good. I'm like, you watch.
Yeah, he is.
That was right.
Yeah, no, I want to talk about this second team for a second. Not because I just love it so much, because I actually want to defend it here a little bit, because it you know, Bam, I don't think anybody really has an issue with Bam or Joel Embiid on that list. Embiid could have been an all first defensive player any other year where Gobert wasn't the defensive player of the year. Bam even could be the same way based off how versatile he is on defense. Him and Simmons very similar in that way that they can guard all five positions. Kawhi is one of those guys that's just a fixture on the all defensive teams. You know, he's never really going to be the first unless he starts playing back to backs. But you know, second team isn't far out as long as he doesn't miss too much time. He is maybe the best perimeter defensive player in basketball, you know, as a whole. Jimmy, we mentioned the time he missed, but at the end of the day, he did lead the NBA in steals per game, the only player to average over two steals a game. So it's pretty impressive. You know, he is the best player on the Heat, in my opinion, still a top 10 player. And most of that is because of his defensive ability. I don't think he can quite guard 1 through 5, but in the modern NBA, I would say he could probably guard 1 through 4 at the very least. And that's pretty good. I mean, you know, the Heat lost in the first round, 6th seed. They still had a successful season to an extent. And part of that is because of Jimmy Butler's defense. But man, Matisse Thybulle, I'm always going to be hard on players that I think can be really, really good. I'm always going to be hard on Heat and Sixers players because they're my two favorite teams. And Matisse Thybulle, I gave a lot of shit for the last few, you know, year and a half, 2 years. But this dude is one of the best defensive players I have ever seen play basketball. The way I am quantifying this in my head is I like to think about potential lineups and how good those lineups can be. And in my head, the no question best defensive lineup any team can play is the Philadelphia 76ers potential lineup of Simmons, Thybulle, Harris, Danny Green, and Joel Embiid. I do not think a team can play a better defensive five because all of them can switch. Matisse Thybulle is one of those rare, genuine, like guard, like what is he, like 6'5", somewhere around there.
Ooh, I was going to say 6'6", but I mean, in the end, he's a good size guard forward kind of deal.
But so even though that's still undersized to guard some big men, but he is so good at defense that there are very few big men he genuinely can't guard. It is that impressive. I mean, he is the primary defender on Trae Young this series. He's sensational. If you haven't watched, I mean, there was a game I saw where he played like 18 minutes. He had like 4 steals and 3 blocks. It was absurd. He had no points. It was incredible. He is defense gets so overlooked because it's not as fun as a step back three or a monster dunk. But if you're talking about the best defensive players in basketball, the best 10, Matisse Thybulle had to be on that list. And if you didn't know that, you weren't paying enough attention to the Sixers.
But that is what I love about the all defensive and all those all NBA teams. Like, people, small market people or people who are subs get snubbed every year. And I thought that would happen to Matisse. Not that he didn't, playing 18 minutes a game and having such a massive defensive impact like you talked about. Yeah, it should warrant defensive team, but Not always. People kind of forget about you and you fall wayside, but that's good. I'm glad.
No, it's good. I think it will, you know, it was probably aided by the fact that someone like Marcus Smart missed so much time. Again, I'm still kind of shocked Chris Paul didn't find a way on one of these teams. I figured that would have probably been his spot, if not Jimmy's spot. But either way, again, I couldn't have a complaint if I wanted to for that second team. So that's always fun. The all NBA teams are actually going to be announced pretty much right after we finish today's episode. So we'll probably have that for you next week, but we'll tweet about them, put them on the social medias, all that fun stuff. A little bit more for basketball here. The Portland Trailblazers we talked about last week, they're parting ways with Terry Stotts. So the head coaching search is on. Three candidates' names that are being interviewed that have popped up: Mike D'Antoni, Becky Hammon, and Chauncey Billups. All have been in the league for a while now. Becky Hammon obviously is going to draw the eye. She could potentially be the first ever female head coach in the NBA. Mike D'Antoni is going to draw your attention, obviously being, you know, having since with the Lakers, the Suns, the Rockets, of course, most recently. And then Billups hasn't really gotten a chance as a head coach in the NBA, but, you know, he won a championship with one of the most impressive championship runs in history. You assume someone like that has some good stuff to teach people. All sound like pretty good candidates to me. My guess is they're going to end up going with D'Antoni. I would love to see it be Becky Hammon, though. I think that'd be awesome.
D'Antoni would last a year there, guaranteed. Oh, yeah. Because it's going to be Brad Stevens and him butting heads. Like, D'Antoni will put into the play sort of the Rockets scheme he had, and it won't work with them because they're not all shooters. Like, they're playmakers, and that's going to be a mess. But yeah, Becky Hammon, I would love to see what she can actually do as a coach. Chauncey Billups, though, the one who probably hasn't been talked about the most, he has not gotten a chance to be a head coach yet. I think he's an assistant on the Clippers now, if I'm not mistaken. I'd love to see what he could do, because his name always gets tossed around for head coaching vacancies, and he just hasn't been able to land one. Like, when the Sixers were looking before Doc Rivers got thrust in the spotlight, like, Billups was a candidate, and it's been like that for a while. So that'll be interesting. And yeah, we'll kind of go from there.
Yeah, we'll see. Billups could be interesting for Dame too, just like the idea they were both star point. You know, Dame's probably better than Chauncey Billups ever was, but like the idea that Billups was a star point guard at the highest level for a while might be able to teach Dame those few things he maybe hasn't quite figured out yet, if there's any. Obviously, Dame is a superstar in our league. Not too much more he has to figure out. The other reason I just keep bringing up Becky Hammon, not necessarily just the idea of the, you know, first woman coach, but like, she's part of the Greg Popovich system. We know how, you know, decorated that the coaches that have come out of Greg Popovich's wings have become. So many, they're all over the place. And Popovich, you know, you would assume probably nearing the end of his career at this point, but the impact he's had on basketball and on the coaching of the game is going to be so long lasting based off all these coaches he's had. So I would trust Becky Hammon. I mean, we've seen guys like Budenholzer for a while there, Brett Brown. There's plenty of other guys that have been under Popovich and succeeded, found great success. Maybe Becky Hammon's the next one. That's all I'm going to say. I'm a big fan of people who come out of that system.
I like the idea. I don't want to see her end up on a team like the Magic. And I just mean that in the sense that the Magic are a project, and I don't want it to be the whole sort of narrative that, hey, here's a woman coach. She coached the Magic. They still played awful and we fired her. Like, that would just kind of be a terrible narrative for everyone. But you know, like I said, I hope she gets a job, or if that's what she's looking for. And it'll be interesting to see if we get a first female NBA head coach.
Yeah, that'd be sweet. We'll obviously keep you posted on that and whoever the Blazers decide to bring in as their new head coach. Last thing for the NBA here, just one quick thing that we wanted to touch upon. I assume at the end of this season, the league is going to start looking into this idea of what is a natural shooting motion. So there's this nonsense of, you know, pump faking and leaning into a player jumping at you to draw the foul. You see it all the time, especially in the modern day. So they're going to start looking into, you know, what really qualifies as the idea of a natural shooting motion, that, you know, did what the defender was doing really actually impact what the shooter shot, or did the shooter shot get impacted based off of how close the defender's contest was, stuff like that. It's just, I think this is going to be really smart for the NBA and really helpful, hopefully, if, you know, they decide to make some changes. But this is definitely something that they needed to start looking at because it's getting really bad. Yeah, that's pretty much it for the NBA here. Playoffs, obviously, moving forward. We'll have another update for you next week. Got the next hockey update for you here now, though, as we are moving forward in those playoffs as well. So Las Vegas, I think they were tied last time with the Avalanche.
No. Last time, no. No. Here's a sabermetric stat. When we talked about hockey, I believe the Avalanche were up 2-0, or maybe they're up 2-1. So I was like, yeah, I think the Avalanche are going to make it to the finals. Ever since that statement, the Avalanche have not won. Avalanche lost the rest of their games. The Golden Knights have won the rest of their games. So not looking good for me. And then the Canadians, you know, played Vegas, their first game of the conference finals, and the Vegas Golden Knights pretty much whooped them, and it's 4-1, and it's not looking too good. However, I will be rooting for the Canadians because one of your buddies tweeted at us when we posted our episode and said, if the Canadians win the cup, I'll eat my shoe, and I kind of want to see that.
That'd be great. That sounds fantastic. So go Montreal, but down 1-0 right now, not looking great. Other side of things, we're always happy to see Boston losing. It's tough when it's at the stake of New York, but like you mentioned last week, the Islanders are one of those New York teams you can get behind a little bit. They took down Boston 4-2, and the Lightning completed the not quite a sweep, but five game season series victory over the Hurricane and the Islanders. The Islanders of all teams up 1-0 over what was maybe the favorite Lightning. Okay, we're moving forward here. We only got four teams left. Have your thoughts really changed on what's going to happen?
I feel like I have to ride the Lightning. That's not a Metallica joke. It just happened to that's a really bad joke that just kind of popped out. I'm going to still say the Lightning. I just think the idea that they have the familiarity and experience in the playoffs, not that the Islanders don't, but they were in the Stanley Cup last year and they won it. The Islanders, I think they played the Lightning. Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, because what was it? I'm pretty sure it was Flyers-Islanders. Islanders won in seven games and then played the Lightning. I could be dead wrong about that. But, you know, I think the Lightning have the experience. I think they're ready. And we're going to find out. The Islanders are one of those teams that can hang around and sort of, you know, they fight hard. They're gritty. So it's going to be an interesting series. I could see it going 6 or 7, but I think the Lightning are going to prevail despite losing the first game. But who knows, quite frankly. And then, unfortunately, I think we're going to have to say the Golden Knights are probably going to beat the Canadians, no matter how much I want to see Buddy eat your shoe.
I think this is their year. I think they were so hot when they first became a franchise, and like, you don't just want to go away from that when you just start and you were that close to the top. You got to break through. I think this is that year. They're hot as could be right now. I think this is it. I think it's gonna be the Golden Knights.
Yeah, I'm okay with it now, but like when their first year when they got to the Stanley Cup Finals, that to me like would have been bad in the sense that like they're an expansion team. Like they can be good off the bat, but if they're winning titles right off the bat, like,
well, weren't they an 8 seed too? Because I'm pretty sure they upset the 1-seeded Blackhawks in the first round, and that was like the last time the Blackhawks were good in recent years.
Sounds about right. I'm not sure. I know they've had really good success. Like they've been like a really top seed in the West. So maybe that year they were an 8, but
maybe I'm thinking the year the Predators went to the Cup.
The Predators.
It might have been that. I'm going to be getting them mixed, my random teams mixed up. Either way.
This is your hockey correspondence, Alex and Robbie. We know everything when it comes
to absolutely all there is to know about
hockey. I want to know of our fans who watches this for our hockey content and just wants to throw their laptop or phone out a window, because I would 100%.
We're doing our very best, despite the fact that I have not watched a hockey
game. Hold on, wait. When would the Stanley Cup be? Maybe if you're around, we could watch and like record ourselves watching it
live. People could just watch the cup. Yes.
People just hate us.
No, they'd love us.
No, they wouldn't. I digress, though. We'll keep you updated on this. I think it's going to be Lightning. I do think the Golden Knights are going to make it. Time will tell, though. The Islanders have been one of those teams that just won't back down. The Canadiens seem like one of those teams that had a nice Cinderella run, but I think it's going to come to an end. Who knows, sure. though?
Yeah, no, they were hot, you know, at the end of the last round, so we'll see if they can turn it around here. But that's what we got for the NHL. Just a tiny little bit for baseball here before we go into our next segment. Basically, another rule thing here for this sport. So there's been a lot of talk recently about pitchers using, you know, foreign substances, sticky substances on the baseballs to help them throw better. You know, highs in strikeouts this year, record lows in batting average. So the league is trying to do something, and they have a new policy now out that, it, you know, they're going to be checking pitchers, relievers, catchers a lot more frequently throughout the course of games now. And if you're caught with an illegal substance that you're using, you know, to help the pitcher throw the ball, it's going to be a 10-game suspension. If it's something along the lines of, like, you know, a first baseman has some that he's kind of just, you know, has on his arm or whatever, his neck, for the pitcher, you know, they have a mound visit and the pitcher's seen, you know, grabbing it off the first baseman, the pitcher is still going to be the one that gets in trouble for that. You know, I looked into that a little bit. So it really is just a rule for pitchers. But no, after a certain amount of times, teams can get fined and maybe pitching staff, stuff like that. But, you know, this is the MLB's push now to try and stop this, because like I said, you know, record lows in batting average for the last 50 years. It's been, you know, lots of star players are having tough times hitting baseballs. Lots of random name pitchers are having randomly excellent seasons. I was watching this video that a good buddy of mine sent. He's a little more into baseball than I am. And part of the video was about Trevor Bauer, because he's one of the guys spearheading this. Trevor Bauer was this random no-name pitcher for so long, and then just all of a sudden becomes one of the best pitchers in baseball, getting these massive deals, you know, after he was done throwing baseballs into the stadium. But
that, hold on, before we continue, that to me is one of the most impressive feats in the world, though. He just whipped it over the outfield fence.
Whipped it. But yeah, so one of the things that this video brought up was that part of the amount of money he gets paid in his new Dodgers contract specifically, like unspoken, unwritten in the contract, is partially to give the Dodgers access to whatever specifics, you know, sneaky substance that he's been using that's so hard to track and so helpful to use. And not just for him, but for the other pitchers to be able to use. And that's kind of, in theory, part of the money that he gets. This isn't obviously necessarily anything I could, you know, confirm in any way, but it does make sense in just the idea of how things have trended and how, you know, obviously the Dodgers are going to be good no matter what, but by the, you know, degree in which they've gotten better, the degree in which Bauer's career has changed from being this, you know, whatever pitcher to quite literally a top five pitcher on one of the best teams in baseball. It's crazy. So the MLB feels the need to do something. This is at least the start of, you know, their kind of counter effort to all these pitchers who are using, you know, if there are any who are using illegal substances.
If, in quotations, of course.
Yeah, you know, it'd be kind of crazy if they just like was a crazy turn in how good pitchers got. But,
and I think we're about a month away from the All-Star game, but they started voting for that. So I think it's probably worthwhile if you highlight a few names that will probably make it in the All-Star game.
Sure.
One of them, as we talked about earlier before the show, Jake DeGrom. He has like a 0.5 ERA.
It's absurd.
Enough said. Basically dominant. He is the, I wouldn't say the only shining spot of the Mets, but like he's the reason they are oh so dominant when he is on the mound.
They're winning the division, and you have to assume part of it's because they get a win every 5 days. I mean, I have some of his counting stats here. 0.56 ERA, 0.53 whip. He's 6-2 with 103 strikeouts. He has only dished out 8 walks all season. By the way, he has 103 strikeouts in just 64 innings. He is absolutely absurd. He's not only the favorite to win the Cy Young right now, but also to win the NL MVP at the current moment. That is how dominant Jake DeGrom has been.
There was one point I know he batted more runs in than he had allowed, which is insane to me.
I believe that's still true. Yes. I think he's allowed like 3 runs this year and he has hit in 5. It is incredible. He definitely is going to be the starting pitcher for the NL. A guy I want to mention, though, for our Phillies, Zach Wheeler is going to be an all-star. Zach Wheeler has been absolutely superb this year. I think he's going out tomorrow against Kershaw and the Dodgers. It's going to be a great game. Dude, he's been sensational. Over 100 strikeouts already. His record is kind of unshowing. He's 4-3 because the Phillies are meh. But he's been sensational. Probably going to be the best competition that DeGrom has for the starter in the NL. You know, Scherzer, we'll see.
Yeah.
In the AL, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. That is my absolute lock. That dude is hitting a home run like every other day, it seems like. Holy crap. I don't know if he's already better than his dad was, but man, is he on that right track if he's not.
He's on the right track. Definitely not yet because Vlad Guerrero Sr. had such a great career. But yeah, I had a chance to see him his rookie year. I went up to Toronto, and he was already dominant then. So it's good to see him being the slugger that we all kind of hoped he would be. And then, I mean, obviously Mike Trout, but his teammate, Otani, mm-hmm. both. He's pitching extremely well, but honestly, it's like the hits he's making are just ridiculous. Like, some of his home runs are just leaving the stadium, and just the exit velocities and how far they're going, absolutely insane. And to me, that's just the output you get from the pitching. Like, he's pitching like 6-7 innings, and then the hitting you're getting as a DH, that to me, best of both worlds. Now, the Angels still suck for whatever reason, but
you can't pinpoint it, but yeah, they still suck, but he's incredible. I think their manager the other day okayed that he can both pitch and bat in the All-Star game if he's to make it. So that would be fantastic if that really does come to pass. Yeah, he's batting like 250, and he's, I think, leading the AL in bombs or second in the AL in bombs. Like, he's doing fantastic. He's not an average hitter by any means, but he's the guy that sends the ball out of the park, and he does it very, very well.
Some other people we probably should mention, Tatis Jr., obviously.
Of course, yeah. JD Martinez.
Yes. What about Abreu?
Jose Abreu. Sure, he's really turned it around. I was going to say Chris Bryant of the Cubs. The Cubs are red hot right now, and Chris Bryant's having a resurgence.
If I have one plea to the world, it's to have Freddie Freeman and Anthony Rizzo just mic'd up for the All-Star game. And Anthony Rizzo...
Hey, that's if Freddie Freeman makes it, though. He's batting like 220.
I know, but like, I like Freddie Freeman. Like, Freddie Freeman is the reason I kind of like the Braves. just a little bit. I don't like them, obviously, because they're our rivals, but...
Right. I understand.
Freddie Freeman. You can't not like Freddie Freeman.
No. And their relationship, him and Rizzo, is spectacular.
I actually want Freddie Freeman in the AL just so he can, like, go up against Rizzo.
Perfect.
Yes.
But yeah, those are some of the big names. Obviously, you know, as we get closer, we'll be able to give you a more condensed list, a more specific list. But for now, those are just some of the names we wanted to bounce off as like the top choices. Any other last ones you want to throw in real quick?
I feel like any list would be incomplete without Clayton Kershaw.
Sure.
But time will tell with that. Like, there's definitely... I need to look more into pitching. I mean, I can name some of the star players at the top of my head. I don't know how well Yelich is doing this year. I know the Brewers are in first in their division, but
they're doing well. He's been hurt a lot. I think he might even be hurt right now. They're still doing well. Someone on the Giants, Kevin Guzman, the pitcher for the Giants, he's been superb this year. You know, people are really wondering why the Giants are doing so well first in the NL at the moment. You know, it's you know, Posey. Obviously, Longoria's out right now, but Longoria was having a great year. Some of their batting's doing well, but their pitching has been spectacular. Kevin Guzman in particular, Desclafani also, but Guzman has been, you know, the absolute ace on that team. And it's kind of weird because he's been really bad for most of his career from what I remember, but having a great, great year here in San Francisco. So he was another name to probably shout out. I would assume he's going to make it.
Yeah, I don't think Yelich will make it after I'm looking at his stats. I just know the name. But yeah, we'll definitely give you an updated list. I think Real Muto from the Phillies or Segura or her. I think Segura is the one that's like, it's either Segura or Herrera. That's like really, I think it's Segura.
Segura is batting. Segura should make it. He might not start, but he's batting like 330. Yeah. He's been spectacular. I would also be very surprised if the catchers aren't, Salvador Perez is going to be the catcher in the AL with probably Yermin Mercedes as the backup. The NL catchers, I don't know who's going to start and who's going to be the backup, but the two are going to be Real Muto and Buster Posey, and that's not a question.
All right. I think that's the news, if I'm not mistaken.
It is indeed.
Nothing to really report in the NFL. I don't have any cricket news, so might as well get to our middle segment, which is, of course, the kitchen. Another hot take debate. We haven't done one of these in a while because we burned through so many of them when we started off, but we're back and we're ready to fight today. The debate is, which is a better style, using statistics or coaching from the heart? So I feel like, should I start? Because I kind of gave you a really crummy intro. I feel like I have to start.
Go ahead. Do as you please. Do whatever you like.
Well, you know, statistics, math, numbers. I know we're all scared of them, but it is the most unbiased way to get stuff done at times. Numbers don't have feelings.
Why was 6th grade a 7 then?
7, 8, 9. 7 is a cannibal, but we will move past that. What I want to talk about is statistics and how important they are in sports. Sports in general is very cutthroat and can lead to, you know, a lot of emotions, a lot of hearts broken. And that's why statistics is so important. Look at the game of baseball. If it wasn't for statistics, this idea of shifts wouldn't exist. People would be third baseman would be on the bag no matter if it was a lefty or a righty. These shifts have done so well. I know you talked about the pitchers before and, you know, the substances they allegedly used, but honestly, it's been the defensive shifts, been trying to figure out spots that hitters normally hit to or are inclined to do. It helps to make those key decisions in moments. And statistics is so ingrained in baseball. I mean, if you look at the movie Moneyball, it's probably one of our favorite sports movies, right? It's a great movie. The Oakland Athletics, small market team, used pure statistics and sabermetrics to be able to create basically a discount superstar team. None of them were superstars, but they were able to do extremely well. They didn't win a title, and maybe that's something you're going to bring up. But they were quite good and only had to pay. I think it was like 27th out of 30 in terms of money spent, which is great for financials. We talked about this guy earlier, Mike D'Antoni. I know he's not coaching anymore, but what he did with the Houston Rockets was so good in terms of making them shoot threes, assembling teams based off three pointers, because the idea of expected outcomes and expected points scored. If you're shooting 35% from three, that means you expect every possession roughly, you'll get 1 point. That's what the expected value of it is. This is some statistics here, Robbie. Try and keep up. I know you're falling asleep here.
I'm doing my best.
If you shoot just under 50% from two, that's slightly less than a point. So if you shoot a three every time and are shooting at 35%, you're going to score more points than if you shoot a two every time. Mike D'Antoni was revolutionary in creating that. And while he didn't win a title either, I know this is going to be your argument that, oh, they didn't win titles, whatever. He didn't have the people. What I want to talk about mainly is this idea of shifting away from, you know, shooting mid-range jump shots, going toward the three. And we talk about D'Antoni all the time and how much of a failure that was. But let's go back a few years to Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr was very big into implementing three-point shooting. Now, granted, some of the best shooters of all time in Curry and Thompson, but that doesn't happen because three-pointers were very taboo until probably 10 or 11 years or so ago. They were not shot at a high volume, and we see that here. And then finally, I got to talk about football because the world has shifted away from those gutsy plays and, you know, going for it when you need to. Going for two when you're down two scores is so smart because if you get it, kick an extra point, win the game. If you don't, well, then you go for two again and you still have another chance to tie the game. while it doesn't seem like you hear a lot of these inputs from the betting community because their point spreads are getting screwed up, but we never talk about when these decisions pay off. A lot of going for it on a fourth down or, you know, the 2-point conversions have helped so many teams over the past years that are obviously being adopted into play calling and mainstream for the NFL. And I guarantee you we'll see more of them in terms of decision-making. But like I said before, stats don't care about thoughts and feelings. They only care about wins. And that's so unbelievably important. The floor is yours.
You know, you're right. Stats don't care about thoughts or feelings. They don't care about things like who, you know, what the narrative is or who's the one shooting the basketball other than, you know, the percentage of that player shot to go in, but it doesn't take into effect, you know, anything like that in terms of name value. But one thing they don't really take into account is the moment, the heat of the moment, that human factor of everything. And this is my biggest argument. You can talk about championships all you want, but there is a world where you can do the stats game correctly and win a championship. I'm sure of it.
Oh, sure.
But the coaching from the heart per se, the coaching from feeling out the game, feeling out what's happened, it has its huge positives and its absolute drawbacks. The low of the low, the biggest argument against me is the Seahawks Patriots Super Bowl. You know, all the stats say run the ball from the 2-yard line. Pete Carroll says, I'm going to do something crazy that they're not going to expect. He throws the ball. There's an interception. That's okay. You really should have just gone with what the stats say. But then, man, I'm going to shift back into basketball here. 2013, the Miami Heat are playing the San Antonio Spurs in the NBA championship. San Antonio Spurs are the favored team to win the NBA championship, despite the fact that the Heat have the big three. The Spurs are up 3-2. Game six. I don't know what, you know, this was kind of right on the cusp of when three-pointers were kind of taking a bigger role in how the offense was initiated in basketball. And, you know, you can't ever say as a basketball fan that it's smart to take a superstar off the court when you need to go into winning time. But Eric Spoelstra made one of the most intelligent decisions that any coach has ever made that to this day, I promise you, I myself would not have made. He took Dwayne Wade off of the court in the third quarter of game six against Dallas because there wasn't enough shooting. Dwayne Wade is never a player that can shoot the three, but all I promise you, the stats are going to tell you that Dwayne Wade should be on the court if you want to win a basketball game. If you want buckets, you want points scored, Dwayne Wade's the guy to have on the court. They take him out and put in Mike Miller. Now you got Chalmers, you got Miller, and you got Bosch. All three of them can shoot threes. Battier can step out. Now LeBron James goes from being like the second or third best three-point shooter on the court to the worst three-point shooter on the court. That is a lineup that's going to work. Obviously, we all know how game six ended with that miraculous Ray Allen shot and then the Heat go on to win the championship. That lineup, that choice from Eric Spoelstra to take out his superstar and put in a shooter, the stats probably weren't telling him to, but that's the decision he made, and it paid off with, as you said, is going to be the biggest counter to your argument, the championship. I don't want to rub it in like, oh, you know, I'm going to have all these championships to talk about. But, you know, that's the biggest storyline is like, you know, the Heat were able to make that change. And this happens a lot in sport. You mentioned the shift as a statistical thing, but the shift could also just happen. Maybe one, you know, maybe a day a player who you don't normally need to shift for has just hit the ball to the left side three straight times. You can just, as a manager, make the decision to shift. Sure, he could, you know, bust your ass and hit it to the opposite side of the field. But, you know, you could just, you could say, man, this kind of is a parallel too, because you could say the stats are now telling you to shift because if he's hit it to the same side three times, that, you know, likely he's going to do it again. But also it's like, if he's hit it three times, but he's not normally someone who does that, maybe he's trying something. And as a manager or a coach, you need to be able to realize that and adjust to that. It's very tough because, again, you can win both ways, but I don't think you're going to get stories like, you know, that miraculous 1983 NC State team. If that team was being coached on stats, not off heart. So it's stories like that. Like it, you know, like I said, the high highs, the low lows, it's, you know, high reward, but high risk as well. But I don't know. That's kind of what sports are, in my opinion. You got to risk it for the biscuit, man.
So that Dwayne Wade situation, let's talk a little about that. Aww. Did they need a three?
I mean, you're not going to score 9 points in one play, but
Okay. Yeah. So that's a lot of end ones. But you know, they're not by nine. Okay. That, let's do some math here. That implies three three-pointers and, you know, the other team not scoring. All right, makes sense. In that case, wouldn't you want to put in your good 3-point shooters?
But this is at a time where 3-point shooting is only beginning to be, you know, we obviously right now, as people who have watched basketball for the last decade or so, understand that a best way to come down from down so much is to just put in shooters. This is at a time where, like, it, you're just kind of realizing as a coach. And I was kind of using it as the example of Spoelstra being one of the people. I'm not saying Spoelstra spearheaded the 3-point movement, but Spoelstra realized how important in that moment 3-point shooting could be, because the Mavericks were playing 4 shooters. The Mavericks were playing Terry, you know, Kidd, Dirk, Marion or Butler, and then their rebounder Chandler or Haywood. You need shooting.
Spoelstra is merely a man of the statistics. He is one with me, Robbie. He took out Dwayne Wade because he knew Dwayne Wade wasn't as good of a 3-point shooter as the other people, even though Mike Miller is Mike Miller. He does give you better 3-point percentage odds, and that little bit of additional percentage helps out. And that's the important thing. Sometimes, like, Dwayne Wade is a superstar. He is someone you're super attached to. At some point, though, you have to look at the numbers and be like, hey, the stats are telling me to put in my shooters because I need to win here. It's all about the W. And here's a good example of when thoughts and feelings sort of came into play a little bit too much. Kobe Bryant. Sorry, that was a horrible way to start off. Kobe Bryant in his last years as a Laker. That's all I was going for. Yes. Kobe Bryant's last years as a Laker. The Lakers absolutely struggled. Now, they didn't have a real roster set around him, and it was sort of Kobe's, like, final years. But stats are telling you to maybe potentially try and do something. Obviously, I understand there's a bit of fanfare associated with it, but the Lakers were in this, like, rebuilding hell when Kobe left, and they would have been for a few more years if it wasn't for LeBron James coming in. And that's the thing, where using statistics to try and assemble a roster that can slowly make you better is going to help so much. And, you know, the Hawks are sort of the modern day, well, not modern day. The Hawks are sort of the new age Rockets in terms of their high volume of 3-point shooting. They 1 through 4 can shoot the 3-ball effectively very well. 3-point shooting, if you can shoot at a normal clip, you're going to win games. The reason why the Rockets didn't make it to the finals, they shot like 1 for 27 in game 7, and Chris Paul was injured. And they, I think, lost by single digits, if I'm not mistaken. It's little things like that. Yeah, obviously coaching from the heart would have told you to put in someone else, but in the end, they didn't have any other playmakers that could have done anything, and James Harden had to be the guy, and he was not in that game 7. Stats used alone will lead you into problems. I'm not here to argue that, but you need to use statistics and need to use numbers and figures and use variances and all these other statistical mumbo jumbo that I'm going to keep laying out that no one cares about. That is how you're going to win the modern day. Because at this point, everyone has gotten so analytical that you either need to adapt or get out. And the last point I'll leave you with, I know it is a made-up show, but Ted Lasso.
Oh, he's bringing out Ted Lasso.
Ted Lasso, coach from the heart. And what did that get him, Robbie? Relegation.
Let's wait till a few more seasons come through and see where Ted Lasso is sitting.
Ted Lasso is going to use analytics in season 2, and he's going to make it back to the Premier League.
We will see, because I'm pretty sure the trailer for season 2 says they start with like 5 straight ties or something, but whatever.
I'm pretty sure you're right.
Man, it's tough to like verbalize arguing for coaching, because part of what I'm arguing for is this idea that it's just like, you need a guy that's just going to want it a little bit more. And you need, as a coach, to be able to realize that. Like a player in basketball, like Rajon Rondo. In football, like, what's a good example of this? Like an Austin Eckler type. Like a guy who's really just going to do whatever he has to do, whether it's catching or running. to get you the win. Someone who's going to, he's not willing, you know, not afraid to sacrifice his body a little bit more. Stuff like that. You need to be able to assemble those guys. Obviously, you need to look at statistics when it comes to assembling a roster, especially in the, you know, the sense of rebuilding. You're not going to always get lucky like the Lakers did and land the best player in the league. You need to do kind of what Toronto did. You need to slowly build up a championship contending team, and then that star will eventually come when Kawhi came, or well, they traded for Kawhi. But part of it is assembling the mesh pieces, assembling these guys that are just going to work well with whatever system, whether in basketball, it's a point guard that's going to facilitate well, in baseball, a hitter that's going to hit well in a certain spot in the lineup that you want to insert him, in football, a guy that's going to be maybe a good change of pace back. That's not always going to show up in statistic, because sometimes guys work better in certain systems. Some guys work better under certain coaches. Some guys work better with, you know, either different, you know, point guards or quarterbacks or whatever it may be per sport. That doesn't really show up in statistics. I'm sure there is a way to track it because there's stats for everything. But man, part of it, there's a balance to both. You know, there's, this isn't like a definitive, you can only use stats, or you can only use your heart and your wits, I guess. But you can't be stat driven. That's what I'm trying to say, because if you're really looking too hard into the stats, you'll miss some of the important things about sports, which are the idea that we human beings are playing them, and things that can't be tracked on statistics or are less common to happen based off the tracking we do from statistics could potentially happen. I mean, there was my absolute end all for this, which I will end on, is, it's going to pain me too, I forget what year it was, but Michigan State was playing Michigan in college football. Last 2 seconds, like literally the last play of the game, Michigan, all they have to do is punt the football on fourth down and the game is going to end. Michigan State was given a 0.2% chance to win the game. That's your stat, your 0.2% chance. Michigan fumbles the snap. They still try and punt. It gets blocked. Michigan State returns the punt for a touchdown and wins the football game. There's no stats involved there. Michigan State just put the right guys on the field, shook Michigan a little bit, got the job done, and won the football game.
You know what the statistics would have told you to do there? Go to shotgun snap, roll out, and just heave the ball as high as you can out of bounds.
Would they, though?
No, because Michigan is stupid.
Correct.
All right. Well, that concludes our kitchen debate. I think it's spirited, and I think both of us had some pretty good arguments. Let us know what you think. Maybe you hate math and hate my arguments, or maybe you hate Robbie's because it's not grounded in any logic. Who knows?
People just hate me for any reasons. I don't blame you.
That's true. You're very polarizing.
It's pretty great.
Well, I do have some news. I think we could finish out on this. The All-NBA teams got announced. So would you want to do that instead of superlatives?
Yeah, we'll do the NBA team says superlatives. We'll get you with some new superlatives next week. But all right, you I'm not even gonna look them up. You just tell me what they are, and we're gonna judge them.
All right,
that's a lie. I have to look them up.
Should we start with the third team?
Let's start with the third team.
Actually, no. I want your guttural reactions on this. I'd prefer if you didn't look them up.
Oh, okay. Hold on. All right, let's do it.
All right, third team, guard Kyrie Irving.
All right, I'm not mad about it. He had 50, 40, 90.
Guard, Bradley Beal.
I'm disgusted by that.
Okay. I'll make you a little less disgusted. Forward, Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, okay, that's what I thought. I figured he'd be 13, so I'm happy about that.
Forward, Paul George.
Interesting. Mostly the fact that he's a forward.
Paul George to me is like Paul George and Jimmy Butler fall in this weird category of guard forward. I consider them correct. Forwards. Other people consider them guards. All right. And then center, our DPOY, Rudy Gobert.
Yep. That's exactly right. Bam, as great as he is not going to make an all NBA team.
All right. The second team is where it gets very dicey.
Oh.
We'll start with guard number one, Damian Lillard.
Ah. Knew he was going to get gypped out of that first team spot.
Guard two, CP3, Chris Paul.
Yep. Sad. He is one of these guys that gets shafted on these lists. He really is playing like an all first team guard, but second team sounds about right.
All right. Forward number one who received the lesser amount of votes for the forwards, LeBron James.
Okay. I mean, I love LeBron, so I'm not really going to. Interesting, he received the lesser, but.
Because the other forward is Julius Randle.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious.
The NBA has the biggest hard-on for good New York Knicks basketball. Oh, my God. I thought Randle was a third-team player. I think he had an exceptional season on an overrated season for the Knicks. But second team, you got to be kidding. More votes than LeBron James. Come on. Come on, guys.
And then the center goes to Joel Embiid. So we talked about this earlier. I think when we did our episode about the All-NBA teams, I had said I think Embiid's going to fall to the second team because they'd consider him a center. He was listed as a forward center. He ended up being a center for the second team. I don't have any qualms about that, but yeah,
Joel Embiid is a better basketball player than Nikola Jokic.
I don't disagree. That's my statement. But I still think Jokic should have won MVP, even as a Sixers fan. I'm telling you. All right, let's get to the first team though, because this is gonna.
Fine. I'm just mad about that. Those last two names, Pitt, like, and I'm sorry. As great as Steph Curry was, the best two seasons this year were Embiid and Jokic. I don't care that they're the same position. NBA, you got to find a way to get them both on the first team. That's a little absurd in my opinion, but that's my two cents. Please, let's do the first team now.
All right. We'll go. So ascending order. So the person who received the least amount of points, but still on the first team at forward, Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah. It's an interesting one based off. Well, I think he did start to play back to backs in the second half of the season. So at least he played enough games to make it matter more. So, I mean, he's incredible. He's a top five player in basketball. So true.
It's interesting in the regular season because I don't think he played incredible in the regular season, but now you see him in the playoffs and it's like, yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
This was polarizing when we talked about it. Guard Luka Doncic.
Yeah.
Because we were split on that, or you him or Dame originally.
I'm not mad about it. I mean, I like Dame more, but I'm not overly mad about it.
No, I would agree. I mean, Doncic carried the Mavericks.
Yeah.
Other guard, Steph Curry.
Steph Curry, then the obvious too.
We got Jokic at center, who got 99 first place votes and one second team vote.
Oh, he wasn't the unanimous one. Wow.
Giannis got all 100 for the first team, which does make sense.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Giannis was no question first team. Giannis also kind of got shafted in the MVP voting this year because we have now gotten bored of what he's capable of doing, which is absurd.
Yeah, he's got the LeBron James effect going in. I think one thing I wanted to talk about, because we did forget about it, there have been reports that Luka Doncic's long-term future in Dallas is kind of up in the air. This all sort of started, I think, from Kristaps Porzingis saying how he wants to have a bigger role. And to that, I can say, no.
Well, there's that, and there's the idea of can they form a good enough team to win again? You know, that 2011 team, as great as they were, was not necessarily a fluke per se, but it was a random 1 year thing. They didn't dominate the next decade or anything like that. You know, he's going to sign his next max extension because nobody's going to be able to offer him more money. Their concern for after that is the main concern. A, will Kristaps even be there? What will the team look like by that point? And B, will the little bit more money that they'll be able to offer him with the 5 year supermax be worth it for him at that point? Or will he want to go to like team up with another superstar or go to a more, you know, high profile place to live like LA, New York, Boston, Chicago, something like that?
He strikes me as someone who'd go to some weird city thinking he's going to live it up there, like Portland, for example.
I have heard, like I said, you know, you're going to hear the Knicks and the Heat all the fucking time in the offseason. I don't think he's the best fit for Miami per se, but I think he would love living in Miami based off what I've seen of him.
Well, I think that's it for our episode. Definitely an action-packed episode, to say the least. A lot of news, a lot of drama, and a lot of talk about a Kings podcast, which won't actually happen.
We'll get there.
But I think in the pipeline, Robbie has put me up to the challenge of doing the current top 50 NBA players, which will make me hate my life. Originally, I thought he said the best 50 of all time, and I really hated everything. But current makes it a little bit easier because I don't have to rank like Steph Curry in between greats, which saves my sanity.
As fun as that sounds, that's tough. Top 50 all time stuff.
That's tough to even be close to getting similar, which is good, but it's going to create a lot of discussion points. But I think either next week or the following week, we'll start rolling it out, maybe 5 or 10 per episode, and then we'll, you know, end a few weeks later with, you know, top 5, top 10. Mm-hmm. So that's something to look forward to. Other than that, I think we're going to keep doing our same thing. Robbie and I, our lives are kind of getting less busy. So we're for a few weeks. We're all kind of roaming around the place, just trying to figure stuff out, but we're still here. We're doing our best and having a good time doing it, say the least.
That we are. Yeah, no, as always, happy to bring you guys the news. A lot of basketball today, basketball heavy this week, but, you know, hopefully more action to come in the other sports, but also, you know, it's just basketball time of year. So love that, you know, for us, for all you guys, of course, too. We'll be back next week, probably at a more normal time, hopefully. Other than that, enjoy the episode and we'll see you then, guys.
Take care, everyone.